It's the 100 Samper Podcast. Welcome back. I am Lamar Lovelace.
I am Graham Coffey.
Graham, what is going on, my dude? What is going on?
Man, you know, just grinding away, looking at some stats and some film and, you know, trying to figure out what's going to happen on Saturday like we do every week this time.
Well, how's life, man? How's life? Wait a minute. How's the cat? How's the cat, bro?
So the cat has been returned.
Nice.
Yeah, he was found after being gone for 6 days. He was about 15 miles from home, 10, what? 15 miles away. Yeah, so there's a national monument south of where we live. Yeah, the Aztec Ruins National Monument. It's a bunch of ruins from the Pueblo Native Americans back in the, like, 900 to 1100 AD. So it's like 1,000-year-old ruins. And he was cruising around the ruins, man, taking the tours with some strangers, pawing on people's legs, trying to find somebody to pick him up and give him a little love. So the Rangers took him in and posted him on Facebook. And I put some stuff on some lost pet groups. And somebody saw my post and saw the post from the National Monument. And we were reunited on Monday. So yeah, man, it was very happy and exciting. And my wife is, you know, a much happier person than she was on Sunday. So
happy wife, happy life, baby.
Exactly right. So yeah, I spent like 30 man hours looking for Jerry last week, and Jerry is no longer, he lost some outside privileges, we'll put it that way.
Yeah, as well as he should. I mean, that's a, you know, you kind of throw the house into a tizzy and everybody's looking for you. Jerry's got to stay home. Jerry can't be out running the streets like Jerry wants to do.
Right. Well, and one of the dogs is like, you know, real attached to him. She thinks he's her son or something. I don't know. But she was like moping around. It was depressing around here other than Georgia beating the shit out of Arkansas. But, you know.
Man, I got some problems.
I was probably happier about that than the dogs were. You know?
I got problems with my dogs, man. I actually put it out there on Twitter the other day. If anybody had bulldogs that they can't stop from fighting, like I got 11-year-old, and then I got this 18-month-old behemoth of a bulldog.
He's getting frisky.
Yeah, man. Oh man, every time we look, he's got the 11-year-old on his back somewhere. I mean, literally, I came out, they were fighting. And I said, okay, this has got to be bad. The 11-year-old bulldog had one paw up inside, like, the bookshelf. The look on his face was like, oh, thank you. You came and saved me. Thank you for saving my life. I mean, because, like, the puppy is, like, gigantic. He's, like, 60 pounds already. He's only 18 months.
Establishing dominance, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's establishing dominance like our dogs. So, you know, like our real dogs, the bulldogs. I mean, last week, man, another big one.
Well, I mean, what did we say on the show? Three-man front. You're
going
to run them out of it. They never switched out of it, so Georgia never really had to throw the ball downfield. Seen a lot of people be like, oh, you know, we can't throw the ball with Stetson. Well, I mean, take what the defense gives you, man. You know?
That's right.
If they're not going to switch their alignment and they're going to give you 5 yards of pop on the ground, you're going to take that first down every two plays and go win by 37. You know what I mean? And
dude, nobody would have tried to throw through that. Everybody would have ran the football. There's no –
Well, Jimbo Fisher tried to throw to it, and you saw what happened, right? You know what
that's true.
I mean, like, if
– With a great running back, by the way. He's got Spiller.
Yeah, Spiller's a,
you know, and their offensive line isn't too bad. I mean
– they were pretty bad that day.
They were bad that day, but they're not too bad. I mean, if anything, they should have tried to run the football. But like you said, they did try to throw the football through that, and that's nuts, especially with – somebody sitting eight guys back in the secondary.
Well, speaking of line play, I thought, you know, that was the takeaway for me was I've been critical at times of this Georgia O-line and feeling like there were some things that hadn't quite clicked into place yet. But, I mean, you know, guard play in particular had been my concern, and Schaefer and Erickson both had really good days up front. Our man, SVP, good Lord, dude.
Stellar.
Just mauling folks. Yeah.
Stellar.
I mean, he's already a beast as a redshirt freshman. But just the push, man. I mean, like O-line play like that where you're driving guys and carrying the pile an extra 3 yards and you've got five guys 8 yards downfield when the whistle blows. Like, that's a mentality, you know?
Yes, it is.
It requires some talent, and Georgia recruits talent up there, but that's a mentality. And so credit to Monken and Matt Luke and Kirby Smart and everyone in that building who set that tone on game week and said, this is going to be a physical game. We're going to come out and we're going to dominate them physically. And that's exactly what they did.
Well, I thought it was interesting that Pittman was back in the house, and it was the offensive line that he used to run that actually took control of this game. I mean, we talked about it on the podcast. We said the offensive line within the GCG, with the guards to the center, had to dominate the middle of the field against that three-man front, and that's what they did. And like you said, these guys came to play with a physical mentality that said, you know what, we're hearing all the noise. We're hearing everybody talking about how good Arkansas is, that Georgia might be ripe for the, you know, ripe for the taking. And these guys took it to heart. They didn't come out and provide bulletin board material. They just went back to work last week. And when they got on that field there in Athens on an early game, I mean, a lot of people talk about how difficult early games can be on a national scale. And they just manhandled Arkansas so much that, you know, our guy, Sterner, had to recall.
Clint, your boy? Yeah. You're in Houston. He's on your local radio.
Yeah, Clint had to, you know, retract his statements, because I tell you what, he wasn't cashing any checks or depositing any large amounts into his local bank. As a matter of fact, he was looking for a loan, he said, because he lost a ton of money, as well as a lot of people probably did, even thinking that Arkansas was going to cover that spread. And we both called it. There was no way they were going to cover that spread. If you evaluate games and you go back and you look at tape, there was no way Arkansas was going to be close.
Yeah. No, I mean, I bet on Georgia minus 18.5 and it cashed, obviously. You're right. Like, I think anyone that watched the film and did their homework, it was pretty clear what was going to happen on Saturday, and it's what happened, right?
That's right. That's right. Well, that game's over. We're 5 games in. Who's next?
Auburn.
What do you think about Auburn, man? I mean, I have my own thoughts.
Auburn, I think if you're a Georgia fan, it's always a game that it seems like people get a little nervous for.
Anxieties.
I mean, hey, man, I was in the stadium when Georgia played Auburn in 2010 when Cam Newton was there. Mm-hmm. Georgia came in and I mean, that was a bad Georgia year. They went 6-7 that year and lost to UCF in a bowl game somewhere, a bad bowl game. But you know, I remember that day, you know, Georgia came out and Aaron Murray to AJ Green was working early. They put up 21 points in the first quarter and that game was close for a little while. It kind of turned into a shootout and Auburn pulled away late. But, That place gets rabid, man. Jordan Hare gets wild. It's the only place I've ever been yelled at or had a drink thrown at me by a senior citizen. And I've been lots of places, folks. Trust me. Okay, that doesn't even happen in Knoxville, and a lot of stuff happens in Knoxville.
Yeah.
So, you know, it can be a challenging environment, and they play the young jock real loud and try to, you know, keep your offense from being able to hear one another and probably do some slightly illegal things with their PA system and all that. And I think, you know, there is a storyline here of Stetson Bennett going on the road in a full environment for the first time, right? Mm-hmm. He's never been, you know, starter for an SEC road game. And I think that's something to consider for sure. But Auburn as a team, man, they're a little bit enigmatic. You know, it's hard to really pin them down. They had that good coming from behind win against LSU last week, but looked really stagnant on offense for a long time. LSU drove the field on them over and over, but they kicked field goals and scored instead of scoring touchdowns. You know, Bo Nix is still Bo Nix. He's a 50% passer who does occasionally make that magical play and will scramble around in the backfield. But yeah, you watch the Penn State game and you see some good things. You watch Georgia State run for 270 on the ground on them, and you're like, this should be a really easy day for UGA. So it's a little bit of both ways. What do you feel?
Well, you know, it's funny because you said they're kind of an enigma when you look at that team. But does it say more to LSU as to what their program is, or more to what Auburn is coming back? Because when I went back and I looked at that tape, I mean, LSU was really dominating that game from the outset.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden, he had this miraculous Bo Nix comeback, and it really wasn't a miraculous Bo Nix comeback, if you ask me. It was LSU really shooting itself in the foot. You go back and you look at the Penn State game. Is Penn State really a number four ranked team? I doubt it. I doubt it highly. Matter of fact, I think you play that game on a neutral field. Auburn might beat them on a neutral field, and most definitely if they play them in Auburn, I think they beat Penn State. But I think both of those teams are pretty equal, but they're not number four ranked teams. You go back to Georgia Southern. Heck, they almost lose to Georgia Southern. I mean, they're
Georgia State. Yeah.
Georgia State. I'm sorry, they're dead in the water. They rack up 250 yards plus rushing against a Power Five SEC conference team. So when you look at this team, I look at Brian Harsin and I look at him as a coach coming in into the most difficult conference to go into. He's going to have his ups and downs, but I don't think that there's no possible way. I don't care where we're playing, that team can be prepared enough to beat a Georgia team this year. It's just, to me, I just don't see it at all.
Yeah. I mean, I think if Georgia was at full strength with JT Daniels, it wouldn't even be a question.
Oh, it's a massive.
And I'm just playing. I'm playing devil's advocate here, right? Because I got my own opinions. But, you know, do you have cause for concern with Stetson going on the road, first road game, you know, in a full stadium of his career? And then you've still got a lot of injuries at the skill positions. Do you have concerns about what the offense can do? Because we know this Georgia defense.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Auburn, we watched Georgia's defense play Auburn last year, and, you know, that Auburn team was better than this one, and that Georgia defense wasn't as good as this version of Georgia's defense.
Right.
So I don't think you got much concern about Auburn scoring a bunch of points or anything like that, but do you worry this could turn into like a grinded out close kind of game that's low scoring?
I don't necessarily worry that it can turn into that. If Georgia chooses to play fearful, or to play safe, let's put it that way, with Stetson being on the road for his first, you know, his first start, it can look and appear that way. But I don't think it would ever be something that's out of control. I could definitely see Kirby saying, hey, let's play field position. Let's make sure we're taking the safe routes. Let's play, you know, make this team drive 80 yards if they had to score against us. And I don't believe that they can necessarily do that unless it's a blown or busted play. But I'm not necessarily worried about Stetson at the same time, as long as he can control his emotions. Because when he throws picks, when he gets out of control, it's really because Stetson believes he's 6'5", 230 pounds, and he can rifle the ball through any, you know, through a brick wall. That's really when
I think it's because he feels like he needs to. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, but I mean, there's also times where you're looking, man, why did he make that throw? And it's like, dude, you can't necessarily make that throw, but you can make a lot of throws. And he makes a lot of touch throws, some beautiful passes that some other quarterbacks there in the room don't even make yet, right? But at the same time, he doesn't have the strongest arm. So I think if he's able to channel his inner 6'5" rocket arm mentality, I think he's fine. I love his ability to lead. I think guys will follow him, no doubt about that. And it would encourages me even more is the way the offensive line played last week. Yep. If we had problems in terms of the run game and our ability to get push with the run game, then I would be a little bit more concerned. I'd still think that we're going to win, but it would have more cause for concern. But not the way that they played last week. I think they're really starting to round into form. Guys are settling into their positions. All of a sudden, they had a big SEC battle last week for their first major test of the year, right, outside of Clemson. And even in the Clemson game, it was a lot of mismatch of guys because of Erickson, you know, going down early and everything, and SVP coming in and having to man the middle for his first time. But no, I'm not necessarily worried so much, just making sure that we curtail those emotions. That's all.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's one thing we've seen this Georgia team has been really good at is just, you know, they don't ever seem too high or too low. You know, it's a business trip every week. And they go out and they play more to their own standard than they do play versus an opponent, right? And that standard is really high. I think that, you know, Arkansas is a physical program, right? I mean, like, they made A&M tap out on the line of scrimmage. They made Texas tap out on the line of scrimmage, right? Yeah. And so it's like, I think if you can make Arkansas tap out, you can make almost anybody tap out. And I would include Alabama in that. And it's not because Alabama doesn't have plenty of talent. It's just that's not – it's not 2011 Alabama anymore, right? This is modern, you know, Ferrari-style Alabama. So I think that, Georgia should be able to go in. I have no doubt that this front seven will dominate Auburn on the offensive line. Mm-hmm. I mean, Auburn's O-line gave up pressure on 42% of Bo Nix's dropbacks last week. Now, he was able to scramble around and make some plays at times and do some good things. But I think this Georgia defense, you know, it's probably an advantage. They've seen a mobile quarterback 2 weeks in a row before facing Nix. I think that helps a lot. You know, you're not going to convince me anyone can run consistently on this UGA defense until I see someone do it. So, and I mean, Auburn couldn't run on LSU really at all last week until the final drive. They were able to bust a big play on the outside. But other than Bo Nix scrambles on broken plays, there really wasn't a sustained run game for them. So, yeah, I mean, from a defensive standpoint, I don't worry about it. Auburn's D-line, it's okay, right? It's okay, but it's not great or necessarily even good. there's not, you know, I mean, 2 years ago when Georgia went there in 2019, right? I mean, that
was the James
Coley year. Yeah. Well, and they had, they had Marlon Brown and Marlon Davidson and what's his face? God, I always get the mess. Derek Brown. Yeah.
Derek Brown.
Yeah. And I mean, both those guys were top 40 picks in the NFL draft that next fall. And yeah, I mean, that was the defense that did the best job against LSU of anyone all year, right? That 2019 LSU juggernaut. So I think that this is a different Auburn team, but I think a lot of people are treating it like it's, you know, your traditional Auburn that has some strong players on the D line and, you know, can be physical on the line of scrimmage. And it's not that. There's not really any game breakers from a wide receiver standpoint. I mean, Demetrius Robertson was a rotation player for Georgia. He's a starter at Auburn now.
Right. Leads him in receiving. Go figure, right?
Yeah. And good for him, right?
Good for him.
I'm happy for him. But, yeah, man, I don't see Georgia, like, struggling with this team.
They would have to implode. I mean, really implode. I mean, there would have to be a crazy amount of turnovers for those who were worried about Stetson. It would have to be a crazy amount of interceptions. And I'm talking like 3 interceptions in our own side of the field. I'm talking Auburn being able to control our defensive line and sustain drives. And I don't see that. I mean, you talked about making Arkansas tap out. The reason why Arkansas tapped out was not necessarily just, you know, you're starting defensive line, you're starting linebackers. It's the constant barrage of players, first team, second team, that you keep getting from Georgia, and they never get tired. I mean, you go back and you listen to anybody nationally, and they're saying to themselves, my God, this team just keeps coming at you. I had people who are Georgia haters DMing me and messaging me saying, you know what, I just got to give props where props is due. Yeah. That defense is so dominant. It's scary dominant. And I'm like, wow, thank you. You know, finally I can clap and say thank you for, you know, acknowledging this team. But when people start saying that, for as much hate as Georgia gets, you know that this team is dominant and you know that this defense is dominant. So I have no doubts that they could possibly make Auburn tap out by halftime, quite honestly. I mean, I could really see that. It just depends on what type of game that we want to play, what type of offensive game plan we go in with. And, you know, who knows? We don't know what Munkin's going to do, because he can go either way, because they believe that they can throw the football around the field, even with the wide receiving core that we have that's a little bit limited. But they also feel they can run the football like crazy now. So we don't know which direction they're going to go in.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the Georgia offense, like, I would expect they'll come out and run the ball and try and force Auburn to bring some guys down the box and create one-on-one matchups outside. And, you know, I think, like, even with even if no one gets healthy for this game, you leave Brock Bowers in man coverage, you're in trouble. You leave Ladd McConkey in man coverage, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Same with A.D. Mitchell, you know what I mean? He'll create problems for you on some go routes and some stop routes and some crossing patterns. So I think there's enough there, absolutely, for Georgia to still, you know, do what it needs to do in the passing game to keep Auburn's defense honest, or at least pay, you know, make Auburn's defense pay for being dishonest in a sense and loading up against the run. I think that, you know, it'll be an interesting kind of test for Georgia to go on the road. But it's also important to remember, like, I was at that Georgia-Clemson game, you know, and that was a loud environment. You know what I mean? Like, that was not, you know, that wasn't COVID ball or anything like that. Like, there was plenty of people in that stadium, and it was, you know, it had a playoff kind of atmosphere to it. So we'll see, you know, kind of how it all plays out. But, I mean, I just don't think Auburn's defense is that good. I think even if Georgia's offense is, you know, a little bit conservative or kind of plays a game plan that's not as wide open as what you might see with JT and a slew of healthy receivers, that Georgia still, you know, puts up 30 or more points, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I really think also is that people are looking at the name Auburn and they're saying, you know what, it's a top caliber SEC team. This year, maybe mid-tier in the SEC, right? You still got Brian Harsin, and I think that's what kind of worries people, is that it's the Auburn name. You're playing at Auburn. But like I said, Harsin in his first year is going to be his first opportunity to play against a Georgia team. Now, granted, he did go down into Death Valley. They did win. But again, I don't really credit Auburn so much as – I mean, yeah, Auburn is as much as I think it was just LSU. I mean, Orgeron's, he's got his own issues down there. But when you're talking about Kirby Smart, you're talking about a guy that is 47-4 against everybody else but Alabama and LSU in the SEC. Yeah. I mean, come on.
And it's only one of those losses has come since his first year.
Exactly. He's been dominant. He's been elite. Yeah. And he's got a team that's elite. And it's one of those teams, like where you mentioned, you came out up front and you said they hold each other accountable. I don't know if anybody actually even saw the special with Kirk Herbstreit before the game last week.
I did, yeah. That was great.
Yeah, when those guys were talking about, you know what, we hold each other accountable. Everybody, and we follow this guy. We follow N'Kobe Dean, and wherever Dean says go, we go. And, you know, there's so much to be said about this team that gets you excited on game day and preparing for it. But, you know, again, going back to this game, I don't really see too many issues or too many concerns.
When you have a player-led program, you don't have to worry about, you know, guys being motivated.
That's right.
Guys coming out half awake and unfocused. You know what I mean? Like,
that's right.
When the standard is internal instead of external, then you don't ever have to worry about meeting the standard. So, yeah, I think this Georgia team will come in there and, you know, they know, you know, I mean, like, they know this is a rivalry game. They know that there's still people out there that are doubting them. They're still the number two team in the country. There's always going to be people, you know, saying that they're overrated or whatever. And I think that they'll use that and they'll be motivated by it.
Any matchups you want to see in this game particularly? I mean, there's always one, but I don't know. I can't even find a clear cut matchup. Like I wanted to see last week with Burks and Ringo, you know, but what do you got?
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. I mean, I think that the matchup, right, is like this Georgia front seven versus Bo Nix's scrambling ability, really. You know, last year when Georgia played Auburn, we saw him, you know, running circles in the backfield all night and trying to throw downfield to Seth Williams and Flash, Anthony Gordon, you know, so some of those guys. Like, Auburn had pretty talented wide receiving core last year, but Nix wasn't really ever able to get the ball to those guys consistently against Georgia. I think, you know, that's the question, is just will Georgia be able to kind of corral him a little bit? And I expect him to run around some, but, you know, will Georgia be able to make some of those tackles in the backfield on a more consistent basis? But, yeah, I mean, this Auburn rushing attack has been productive at times. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, like Nick's had 70 yards on the ground against LSU off broken plays and stuff. But one thing that stood out to me was like 136 of Auburn's 163 rushing yards last week came after contact. Mm-hmm. When they played
Penn missed State. Tackles. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was like, this is a good tackling Georgia football team. I think that's the biggest maybe key for them is just they got to wrap up and tackle, especially when they get to the quarterback. But yeah, man, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see just how much Auburn can hold up on the O-line. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's kind of the question. The D-line for Auburn, I haven't gotten to dive super into yet. You know, we record tomorrow for our preview show, and I still have some work to do for the film show. But, just from watching – I mean, I've watched them play 2.5 games this year, right? You know, I watched that Penn State game. I watched the LSU game, and I watched them play a good bit of that Georgia State game. And it's just like if Georgia State's gashing you for 270 – then that tells me you know, either you have massive problems internally, which may be part of it, but also just you don't have a super talented D line. I mean, we met with the guys from the UAB podcast who told us they had a guy that was a rotation player and couldn't really get on the field for that UAB D line that Tony Fair and went over to Auburn and he's playing starter snaps right now.
Yeah.
So I just think there's a massive talent disadvantage for Auburn there. And I think, you know, Georgia can probably do very much what they did against Arkansas last week, which is pound the ball consistently on the ground and get yardage and dominate on the line of scrimmage on defense and probably cruise to a pretty comfortable win.
Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing. I just don't see the talent level so far. Again, I'm like yourself. I haven't really dug so deep into the video work yet on it. But, I mean, just going back and looking at those games, I did watch the Penn State game. I did watch the LSU game. And part of Bo Nick's scrambling is because the offensive line isn't that stout. They're very slow, quite honestly. I mean, I really expect our outside linebackers to feast. And I'm talking about Smith and Anderson going completely nuts, and anybody else is going to rotate in with them. And if you think you're going to do, like, a lot of draws, maybe to Tank Bigsby or something like that, he's going to get swallowed up by Tindall or N'Kobe Dean coming down through that gap, but you're not really getting through there because you got Jordan Davis and those guys playing so stout up front. So I just don't see any type of letdown in this team. And I think it's going to be not a cakewalk, but it's going to be an easier victory than what some people are actually believing so far. You have a prediction?
Oh man. I will go 31-6.
31-6. Wow. I am actually going to go 41-7. I think it's going to be
big... the end zone.
Nah. If they do, it's late. And it's only because it's only because of a miscue. Even if it's late, because, you know, again, Kirby doesn't like Auburn. Let's be frank with that also. He does not like Auburn, never has liked Auburn. I mean, it goes back to Gus Malzahn being there and even his playing days. He doesn't like Auburn. We shouldn't like Auburn. So I don't see him taking it easy. I think last week he kind of, you know, took the dogs and pulled them back a little bit. I mean, it was Sam Pittman. I think he kind of pulled it back just a little bit because I think they could have hung maybe 50 on Arkansas if they wanted to. But I don't really anticipate them on letting anything up this week.
Yeah, I mean, Georgia stopped throwing the ball after the second offensive possession.
Exactly. That's crazy.
After that block punt took them up 21-0, I think they attempted like three more passes all day.
That's crazy, bro. Crazy.
Well, but I mean, part of it too, man, like what I would say if you're a Georgia fan that's like, well, why aren't they, you know, throwing the ball around or getting that work in? It's like, why put more stuff on tape? You know,
exactly.
Todd Monken, you got a long year ahead. You know what you got. You know, why burn any of that stuff on the film for the opposition? That's
kind and quite of honestly, they needed to work on the run game more than anything.
They did.
That was the best opportunity. Man. That's a live practice right there in front of 92,000, 93,000 people. That's a live practice to get these guys the work that they needed to really be dominant. And Not only that, not only were they dominant in the run game, each player in the running back room was successful. You had Kenny Mack, you had Edwards, yeah. You had Cook, you had Zeus, and you had Milton. All of them ate, and all of them ate well.
Finally saw your boy Milton get in the end zone, man.
I was just watching the video of his mama crying on Facebook, you know.
Oh, hell yeah. I didn't know that was out there.
Yeah, man. So, you know, she was screaming her head off. But yeah. So I think that was probably the most positive thing of last week was their ability to have a live practice against some live competition in front of national TV too. I think that really solidified everyone's thoughts as really saying that this team truly is dominant. But you know what, before we go any further, we have a special interview with a dog ma who's in the house. Traylee Hale, who's going to come on and talk to us. Not only about Keeley, I know everybody wants to talk about Keeley, but also some personal things that she's got going on. But got to get a quick question for you. Yeah. Because I think, let's see, it'll be this time next week when maybe we record. Delp, what's your thoughts on Delp, man? Because he's going to commit on the 13th, and by the time that we actually could do a show or you do your other thing on Dog Sports Live, he might be committed somewhere. What's your thoughts on Delp?
He's a baby Brock Bowers. I mean, maybe Brock. Dude, they were running in rounds with him in his high school game the other night, just like Brock. I think he's another freak tight end to put in that room. I think his route running ability is extremely smooth for a big man. I think he's very fast on his feet for a guy that size. He checks all the boxes of what you'd want a tight end. Actually, met his parents, shared an elevator with him a few times at the Georgia-Clemson game. Really nice folks. So I would be very shocked if he is not a dog when he drops his commitment. But I think, you know, the amount, you know, if he comes in next year, you've got Darnell, Bowers, and Delp in the same tight end room. That's going to be something people talk about for decades later, you know, when they're all in the NFL, like, oh yeah, like it'll be like that picture of Sony and Chubb when they were freshmen with Gurley. It'll be that kind of deal,
dude. I think it's crazy. You know, and you know what's really funny about this whole recruiting season is that everybody was really worried about the tight end room, and actually even going to the wide receivers as well. And I think now the recruiting is now matching the philosophy of where we are going offensively. Got to give a lot of credit to Harley.
Todd Harley.
I mean, he's they're doing a bang out job, man. I mean, he's a guy that kids trust. They trust the offense of what Munkin's doing. They trust Kirby Smart in the progression. I mean, he was telling guys, hey, be patient. We're working on something, some things that we could do, some things we couldn't do, but now everything is kind of coming into fruition, and it's going to be an exciting recruiting season. I mean, right now for Delp, it's coming down to Georgia and Michigan, what it looks like. And, you know, I anticipated him on saying, you know, he's all dog. But we shall see next week. Hopefully he does commit, and we won't have anything else to worry about that. But hey, I think she is on the line. We have Traylee Hale, like I said, Queen Traylee. And we'll talk to her, and then we'll finish it up with you guys and finish the show. Okay, we are joined by Traylee Hale. That's right, the queen herself, the king.
Hello, you know, hello.
Hey, how are you? How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, no, thank you for joining the 100 Sanford podcast. You know, we have players on, we've had coaches on, we've had other family members on, but it's such a pleasure to have you on the show. You are a fan favorite. You are a dog ma. And you were one of those people that kind of brings like a lot of energy on Saturdays, even in your pictures and everything else to the game. So, again, thank you for coming on.
My goodness, fan favorite. Thank you. That's such a compliment. It has been an amazing journey, and it's been a lot of fun from the first viral snake pictures to to the fun ones in the red dress. And here we are. And gosh, this journey is, it's not even close to being over. I'm really enjoying it.
Well, what's it like? What's it like being a dog mom of Keeley Ringo? You know, he's obviously a fan favorite, but what's it like being a dog mom for that particular guy?
It's amazing, actually. I still like can't believe sometimes that I was so blessed to get to be Keely Ringo's mother. He is just the most amazing young man a mother could ever ask for, especially having been a single mother all this time. He is just so driven and has been, and so supportive, and he is just so focused on the game. And I'm so excited to watch him finally get his opportunity to prove himself.
How excited were you last week or a couple weeks ago when he had that first interception? I want to let you know, I called it. I said it was going to happen. You did. But how excited were you when he got that first interception?
I lost my mind. And as you can see on the images, my voice didn't come back till like the end of the next day. My headache didn't go away till the next day, but I wasn't thinking about that at all. I was so excited. Everything happened just at the exact same time. We had just dealt with the passing of my father, as you read in the article, as well as so that my dad was there. I had said a prayer, "Dad, let's get an interception." I actually had asked for a pick six, but I knew he'd deliver. Maybe that's why I ended up in the front row somehow. But I just thought that everything happened for a reason that day. Everything was lined up as it was supposed to be for me to be in the front row. Literally, I just, like I said in the article, I just kind of looked around and saw some black chairs down there and thought, I'll just have a seat. And so then as the linemen are down there warming up, you know, they all know me and I'm that mom. So I'm like, hit him. Let's go. Hit his ass. You know, so I'm encouraging him and I'm enjoying myself. And then before I knew, I looked to the left and to the right and I was like, I'm in the handicap section, and which is not entirely inappropriate for me, but... So, but yes, I was able to, I just knew the adrenaline rush that my son got at that exact moment. He was able to show what he was able to do and what he came to prove at Georgia. And it was just, it just kind of opened the gates for him and it increased his confidence. And he's going to continue to put on a show for us. I know it.
That's right.
Well, yeah. So what's that like for you? I mean, you know, watching his journey from Tacoma, Washington to Arizona, now all the way in Georgia. And no one knows the work that he's put in better than you do. You've had a front row seat to witness all of it. What's it like to see all that hard work finally come to fruition and, you know, him being on the field and making plays for Georgia as a collegiate athlete?
It's amazing. He's making moves. He's making moves that he is capable, that he knows he's capable of doing. And now he's able to show everyone what he's capable of. So again, I know his confidence is going up and he's just able to finally do what he loves. And I'm proud. I'm the proudest mom, I think, there in the stands.
You know, Traylee, so it shows in the program that Keely is from Tacoma, Washington, but went to school in Arizona. How did that come about?
So, yes, with I brought Keely down from Washington and moved him to Phoenix his sophomore year of high school. As you know, I'm a flight attendant. And so I had to just make sure that he was responsible enough to be able to get to school, make sure homework's done. And gets to practice, because when I leave, I go on a 3, maybe 4 day trip. And so he had to step up and really face that responsibility right away when he came down to Phoenix. But I brought him down there to go to Saguaro High School because it's such a well-known high school for football. And that's where I put him. And right away, he got his 5th star. And it's been uphill from there.
Absolutely.
It's been, yeah.
So are you... Do you still live in Phoenix now or are you in Georgia? I'm sorry. I
technically still live in Phoenix, but through COVID, of course, and I had intentions as soon as I got Keely out the door to college on June 3rd. I had every intention on him, on me starting to pack up the house and relocate. He left on June 3rd and on June 12th, I got my cancer diagnosis. Oh, wow. And so I just had to reevaluate and I didn't have the energy, the stamina, the endurance to start breaking down the house. And I'm just now getting back to that point now. So I'm looking forward to, yes, the permanent relocation.
Okay. So with that diagnosis, I mean, you know, talk to us a little bit about that. people. I know a lot of people that listen to the show. I know, you know, myself personally, possibly, you know, like I've had family members that have gone through it, but, you know, give us an idea for those of us that have not had our own diagnoses or haven't seen it in our family. Like what's the day to day like? What have you been going through?
So one very eye-opening moment for me was when I was sitting in my living room and I was so incredibly weak at this time. And I was actually on my second chemo round. And I'm just going to be completely honest with you guys. And again, I'm an open book and completely transparent. And I'm here to teach the month of October about breast cancer and the awareness and what, and if anything, hopefully this scares you into not one, not getting, you know, hopefully it scares someone at the very least into getting checked. So I was sitting in my living room on the couch, and I unfortunately had a UTI from the chemo, my second round. So I was sitting there just miserable, hungry and, just nauseous and looking in the mirror at myself at 130 pounds at 6 foot tall. And just, you know, looking down at my fingers, my, you know, missing fingernails, missing toenails, and my hands, you know, being so cracked that, again, that I couldn't walk, my hands and my feet so cracked that I couldn't walk. The type of chemo that I was on actually made every crease on your hand an open wound. So paper cut, pretty much. So you forget about opening anything, can of pop or flicking a lighter. There was no way. I just was just miserable this specific day. My hair was coming out. The chemo gives you, I told you I'm going to possibly tell you more than you wanted to learn about me or about cancer, but this is just the real, and I'm going to shoot you straight because that's the only way I know how to be. I had, it gives you the runs. So I had a UTI, the runs. Chemo stops a woman's cycle, but it had not done so yet for me. And so I was sitting in the living room just weak and thinking to myself that I have to get up and go to the bathroom and deal with all three of these things going on. And I just pulled out some of my hair on my head and set it on the table and got up to go to the bathroom. And when I sat down and I pulled down my adult depend, there was all my pubes right there. It was horrible. It was horrible.
You know, that is an amazing detailed story. And I know that's something that people would, you know, want to know, some of those things that kind of happen. But is there another side effect or any other side effects that people can anticipate?
Another main side effect is that the chemo significantly damages your enamel on your teeth. Nobody told me this. I had no idea. And literally, when I went to just in my normal 6-month checkup, my mouth wasn't feeling very, very good, but I didn't expect to hear that news. So literally every filling had to get replaced. There were a couple root canals. It just really tears your mouth up. And I wish someone would have told me in the, you know, going into it. So, there's, you know, trays that you can purchase, fluoride and, other pastes and fluoride, et cetera, that you can put into some trays to sleep with. I believe that what happened to me could have been preventable, but I'm glad that part's over with. It took me months to get my smile back normal.
Yeah. Well, it's back. Your smile is definitely back. But, you know, I know you said something else. You said that there was a, because I know we talk about Keely, and I know that sometimes you try to not necessarily bring him so much into all this, right? You said something about when you had to see him during his surgery. Now, he had his own thing going on. He had a shoulder injury and he had a surgery on that shoulder. Tell me about that a little bit, or tell us about that.
Yes, mentally and psychologically, he had made the executive decision to go ahead and have his shoulder surgery, which I think was the smart move. This is chess, not checkers. if you will. Mm-hmm. And so he was just defeated mentally and psychologically, as was I, but I knew that I had to be there for my one and only baby. So just, again, I was on that red devil, and it was in the beginning of my treatment. But I was on my deathbed and somehow found, I don't even know how I did it now, looking back on it. It was horrible. I am a flight attendant, for American. I was the passenger this time. And it was a rude awakening, getting pushed through the airport in, my wheelchair, going through security. It was just so much. It was so humbling. When I finally got to Georgia, I caught an Uber and, just had to have the driver pull over a couple times. It was rough. When I finally got to the hospital, I was better, you know, just seeing my son. But that was a hard time for us both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that goes to just show you how tough not only you are, but also he is. I mean, you guys are just an amazing duo, quite honestly, because at the time that he's going through things, you're going through things. But together, it's probably a strength that kind of fed off of each other that made you guys even propel to go even further. So that's amazing.
Yeah, my son and I are amazing. We have an amazing relationship. I'm so blessed to be his mother. He's just the most compassionate, the most amazing young man. He just never ceases to amaze me. He's here at Georgia and under Lanning and under Adai, and these men are my son, and I just really made a great decision, you know, or I didn't make the decision, but I had a little bit to do with it. But I just, it's great. It's great being here. It's great. They got him where he needs to be, and mentally, psychologically, physically, all the way around.
Awesome. Awesome. Yes. How are things going now?
It's still going on. Fortunately, I have been off from chemo now for 4 months, and literally just found out. I was in with my doctor, and I had a mastectomy complication. So my left breast literally did not heal correctly. Mm. And to make a long story short, with it not healing correctly and my going through my reconstructive surgery, it forced out my spacer that was designed to restretch out your skin. It forced it out the front of my breast. Oh, and so, yeah, it was like I gave birth to it, and I just didn't have to name it. It was crazy. And so then I had to begin the, so now I bought myself 2 extra reconstructive surgeries. And so that's what I'm going through at this time. I had to come off of chemo because of that. The chemo compromises your ability to heal. So I wasn't healing, and that's what happened. So I had to come off of chemo for that. And I had 2 rounds left. I was sure. I had some scans and I had blood work. Everything came back as though cancer-free. And I just knew that I was. And it wasn't, I went in to see my oncologist after my surgery on my left breast to close me up. And she didn't like that it was red and thought that I need to have it looked at by a dermatologist. And they biopsied it. And sure enough, cells are still there. And I'm going right back on chemo this week.
Oh, no.
So it just is what it is. It's what I have to endure to continue to see my son on the field. It's the worst thing I've ever had to go through. I'm not looking forward to going back on it. I'm actually not crying right now because I was given some medication to make me not care as much, which is much needed.
Well, how long will this next round be for you? And when do you start? 6 months. 6 months. Okay.
6 months, and I'm waiting for it. Yeah, it's going to be an oral chemo, and it's coming in the mail.
For those who aren't familiar, what was your original diagnosis?
It was stage 2B, so that's almost stage 3. Mm-hmm. It's like 2.5. triple negative ductal carcinoma. And when I felt, I literally felt the mass in my breast in October and was in complete denial, actually. I was just, that could be cancer. It wasn't me. I don't have cancer. I was starting to hear about cancer from different angles, from different people. My ex's mother literally passed away. So my son's grandma died in June, the same month that I got diagnosed. My mother reached out and got some cancer insurance. So I had literally not known anyone that has had cancer. That the disease couldn't have been further from my mind. And so when I felt that mass, I thought it was a clogged duct or something. But it was it. So I am just advising, wanting to take the opportunity to tell every woman, this triple negative actually affects women, between 30 and 40. And so by the time women go get an imaging, they could have had way more than a 2B. And they took out some lymph nodes, and the lymph nodes had some cancer cells in them that were kind of that were dead. So had I waited a little bit longer to get on to start my chemo, then that's a gateway to the rest of your body. That's how you that's how it spreads.
Right.
And so I'm fortunate, and I'm so thankful that I did catch it that early. But I had a triple negative is very fast multiplying.
Well, with this next round that you're about to go through, that's going to take 6 months, what is the prognosis? Have you talked to your physician so you can educate again, continue to educate?
Yes. So the type of chemo that I was on was the last kind of the tail end of chemo. So you do the hardest chemo at first, and then you go onto a pill version. And that is to just, when they removed my mass, it was still cancer. The chemo had not ate it up completely. So due to that, I had to go back on another type of chemo, just for little floaters in your system. I don't want a piece of it to reattach on my kneecap. Now I've got bone cancer. That's how it works. So I have to go back on that type of chemo that I had to terminate early because of the mastectomy complication.
Are you going to have help with you? Is your mom coming to stay with you?
My mother. Mm-hmm. So my mother has relocated to Georgia now from Washington. And when I'm in town for games, this is where I crash here with her. Mm-hmm. And again, I was looking forward to the opportunity to go back to Phoenix and break down my house and get relocated and now starting chemo back. But it is what it is. And everything happens for a reason. It's going to happen in perfect timing. I'm going to beat this. It's just I have cells that are lingering.
Yeah.
So yes, it's just been really difficult with the quarantine. Mm-hmm. And, now that I'm in Georgia, I don't know anyone. My friends are flight attendants and they're all working. They're all recalled back flying now. And so I just am here. It's just boring, lonely. I've been quarantined since March of 2020. So yeah, I don't go anywhere or do anything. It's rough. Mentally, psychologically.
With this diagnosis, I know, just from things I've read and your social media presence, it seems like you and Keely have always been tight, but has this brought you guys even closer together?
My cancer actually, I do feel that it will ultimately have that effect. But honestly, for right now, I tried my best to keep it from him. I tried my best to, yes, when I was having a lot of mood swings, the chemo causes chemo brain, which is the reason for my stumbling on my words. My thesaurus is shot. It makes me forget my sentence, where I'm at. I oftentimes need reminded of where I'm at, and in in my conversation, it's really difficult. It's basically learning to function within a new normal. Mm-hmm. And so when I meet people, I just have to tell them, this is what I'm dealing with. This is who you're talking to. So be patient with me, please.
Right, sure.
But yeah, okay. I'm sorry. Back to Keely though. He, I've just tried to keep it from him. He has been a support system, but, actually coming up onto season, I don't see him at all. I can't get my son to go to lunch with me or, you know, at dinner, any off time. Like, I don't see him at all. It's rough. Yeah. They've got these boys on a really strict schedule. So Keely doesn't see a lot of what I'm going through. I actually have to tell him that I'm going back on chemo before this podcast comes out because I keep that much from him. Yeah.
Yeah. So Traylee, you know, we thank you for being on the show. No doubt about it. I mean, this is really going to drive home some things to our listeners, our female listeners, not only that, but also our male listeners. But, you know, before you go, what do you have to say to women in regards to paying attention to the early signs, detection, things of that nature? Not only just women, because men get breast cancer too.
Exactly.
What do you have to say?
Yeah. So in closing, honestly, early detection is key. And knowing your family history, also completing monthly breast exams. Ladies, get up close and personal, because this is something that if there were a mass and you were to feel it, you want to have it get some imaging right away. Again, I'm really embarrassed to say that I felt my mass in October, and just again being a single mother, just put my son first, of course. And if I wasn't working or flying, then I was being a soccer mom, football mom rather. and so I just kind of neglected that. And besides, I also didn't believe that it would happen to me. So literally, I would have, now looking back, I would have started getting mammograms at 35, because gosh, it's just this life changing. I'm actually promoting Bulldogs Battling Breast Cancer this month, and I'm really excited to be partnering, Keely and I to be partnering with them. They are raising money and they provide free mammograms for women. And also the money that is going to be raised, goes to new, equipment for those images and, awareness. And all the money goes to St. Mary's and takes care of ladies who are not in the position that they would not have been able to, you know, have those services otherwise. So I'm really proud to be able to have that opportunity. And my GoFundMe is still active under Team Traylee. I just haven't changed the amount. But now that I've bought myself an extra two surgeries because of this mastectomy compromise, anything helps. But again, I'm looking forward to being able to promote the Bulldogs Battling Breast Cancer. It's for the collective. And my son, Keely Ringo's brand is going to be dropping within the next week, maybe 10 days. And honestly, the procrastination has been because of me, because of what I've been going through. And he's so busy on the field. A lot of it's been my responsibility, but we've formed a good team for Team Ringo. And when his line drops, I hope that you guys will go out and support my son. Thank you in advance for that.
You know, everybody's going out there to do that. They can't wait to kind of support the whole NIL movement. But we know that eventually it all comes home anyway. You and, you know, your son, and just enjoying this moment of just growing together. And I know you love and enjoy watching him grow. That's your baby boy. It is what it is.
Yes,
right?
It's surreal. It's just simple. I couldn't ask for more. I'm so thankful to be here and a part of the dog family.
Awesome. That is awesome. Again, we thank you for coming on the show. And again, I want you guys to go support as much as possible, you know, Bulldogs Battling Breast Cancer. Also support Team Traylee, and, you know, get it done. We need to have some awareness. We need to make sure that people are getting checked out, and we need to make sure that there's some early detection so we could save lives and make sure that we continue to beat this thing called cancer the same way our Bulldogs beat everything on the field. So, well, Traylee, again, thank you for coming on to the show. We appreciate you. and we will continue to support you. And, you know, as always, reach out to me, DM me, text me, do what you got to do. The whole 100 Sanford crew, we always got your back.
Thank you so very much for having me. And thank you to the Dog family for listening to and learning a little bit more of my story and who I am as a person.
Well, all right. So, Graham, before we go, that was Trey Lee Hale. Do you have anything else you want to bring up during this show before we get out of here today?
I just, you know, I thought that was a really powerful and honest interview from Trey Lee. And you know, I said it to her, but again, I'll just say I really appreciate her vulnerability and willingness to share, you know, some really personal details with us and give folks an idea of, you know, what a loved one or a friend or a family member goes through when they do have a cancer diagnosis. And yeah, man, just a reminder that, you know, when you love people and you care about them, make sure you tell them you love them and care about them all the time, you know. And there's a lot of good groups out there that are helping fight this disease, like she brought up, and Bulldog Battling Breast Cancer. You guys definitely go and support them.
Yes, sir.
I've gotten to know Dwight pretty well through the years from helping to kind of promote some stuff for those guys, and just really good, fine people. And yeah, just encourage everyone to help out. And you know, if you got a family member that's fighting cancer, give them a little extra love today, or you know, reach out, say hello, because like she said, you know, it's lonely, and especially in these COVID times where you know, you're dealing with a weakened immune system already, and you know, I'm sure it's really risky to get out and about and do anything. So yeah, just I think time and words and consideration, you know, go a lot further than we realize sometimes our, you know, our time just picking up the phone and checking in on somebody means a lot more than we think it might.
Yeah, I really thank her for coming on to the show. She is very, very special, folks. You know, it's funny because, you know, I'll message her every now and then. A lot of folks don't really know that, but I've been in contact with them probably for like 2 or 3 years, quite honestly, even during the recruiting of Keeley, going out. I don't know, it must be something about that 2020 class, because like the Miltons and everybody else. But, you know, when I message her, I never knew about the diagnosis. Then all of a sudden she comes out with the diagnosis. But when you're talking to her, she's so upbeat. And now I can see why. You know, it's an inner strength that she wants to promote. It's an inner strength that she has. And to be able to come on a show, on a podcast, and to truly be vulnerable. And, you know, we don't put out the video to this show, but to see her energy, and even her energy before and after, is phenomenal. And, you know, I wish I could put out the video. She asked me, she said, "Are you going to put a video on?" I said, "No, I'm not going to do that." But I would love for people to see just her energy, because she's such a special person. And then you can kind of see where Keeley gets it from, that high energy, that ability to continue to be, you know, to go through a brick wall to get things done and to be successful. And, you know, again, like Graham said, go out there and support. Go out and talk to somebody who is suffering with cancers. Go out and support anybody that's suffering with anything. It lets you know how lonely people can get during a time of illness, during a time of sickness, whether it's COVID during this COVID times, or whether it's cancer or anything else. You know, reach out to them and let them know that you care and that you are there for them in any capacity. So go out there, support Trey Lee. Go out there, support Bulldogs Battling Breast Cancer. I know we have. And just continue to be that light that people need. So, with that being said, you know what? Let's go out there and get that another dub this weekend. And that's it. Go Dogs. All right,
man. Go Dogs.
Thank you for listening to the 100 Sanford Podcast. Tune in weekly to hear fresh content from the 100 Sanford Podcast every Thursday, but also with some pop-up shows every now and then as news breaks. You can also follow the content on our website, www.100sanfordpodcast.com, and email us at dogs@100sanfordpodcast.com. Lastly, reach out to us on social media streams. For Twitter, it's @100sanford, but on IG, TikTok, Facebook, and other accounts, it's 100 Sanford Podcast. All right, folks, that's it. And as usual, see you at 100 Sampling.